Hi everyone, how are you today? I just want to say it's really hot here in the UK. I'm not even lying. I have been sweating constantly, even when I'm outside, inside, even in the cold bath or shower, literally anywhere right now. So, because I'm bored, I thought I would do another podcast episode, but this one is going to be based on a very big, what can I say about it? A very big serial killer. I think that's the proper term for it. So I'm gonna label it as, yeah, basically an American serial killer. And if you do not know who I am talking about just yet, you will in a minute. So with this serial killer, I'm going to be talking about early life, childhood, the high school, the late teens, early 20s, which was around the first murder, his service towards college and army, returns, relocations, and then we're going to talk about more of his late 20s and 30s with his murders and, you know, when he was arrested, his capture, his confession, the trial, even his death. All I can say is that he himself was a man who was indecent and I don't know, like, very. He was very. I can't say the word. I think personally, he's insane and he's definitely got something wrong with him. But yeah, I'm trying to think of the proper word to say what I think of this person, and it will be vile. It will be horrific for what he has done. You know, sometimes in these cases there are the psychological part of it, like the medical psychological things like that. So I do sort of understand in some aspect that this man went through some things, or maybe, you know, he's got disorders, and he does have at least three, which in which he was diagnosed, but he was found to be legally sane at the trial. Now, the person we are going to be talking about, if you haven't guessed already, is the one and only Jeffrey Lionel Dahmer. Okay? Now, like I said before, I'm going through all of those contents that I've already spoke about, and hopefully, it would be like an hour long, I'm not sure just yet. There are different takes, and I am going to be talking about the side of Jeffrey Dahmer to do with psychological events as well, so that will be another segment. And if you were interested in psychological facts, I do study that a lot of the time, even though I haven't taken it as, you know, like a course or anything. I do research a lot on it, and I think it's, what's the word now? I'm running out of words today. But I think it's practical that we do understand some disorders, and some conditions, because it might not affect us, but it affects other people. So it should be in our lives to understand what they go through, and you have to be understanding into knowing that the impacts things can take on them, or, you know, their needs. So, you know, because he was diagnosed with three disorders, I will be using those three in the psychological segment. So this is the introduction. Nothing, I'm not getting into anything crazy right now, but I think what we're going to do is we're going to start off with early life. In this segment of the early life, I will be talking about childhood and the adolescence and high school part. I'm going to do each in those segments. So, I hope you enjoy this episode, Jeffrey Dahmer, The Morgue. Okay, so we're going to start out on Jeffrey Dahmer, where he was born, and the actual date. Now, Jeffrey was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and this was on May 21st, 1960. Now, during his early ages, like an infant and a child, sources suggest that he was deprived of attention, so meaning that the family didn't give him enough attention. But others suggest that the family was super close and gave lots of love and attention to Jeffrey, and that there was like portrayed as this perfect little family. But when you like look up just how the family was growing up for Jeffrey, it seems like each family member had something else to say. Like the mum and the dad both had different experiences. They thought everything was great, fine, but then the kids were like, well, this is a very toxic household. Like, they were fighting all the time. And now Jeff would say that his mother was very tense. She was greedy. She always wanted attention, seeking attention from anyone possible, and was always in arguments with her husband, etc. So when he entered first grade, his mother, whose name was Joyce, she wasn't doing well. And, you know, she was just struggling with depression and spent a lot of time in bed. She was feeling very emotionally weak and physically weak and tired all the time. And so the source that suggested she always wanted attention, this is where it peaks through. She didn't seem to want to give any type of attention to anyone, towards her kids, towards Jeff's father or Jeffrey's father. And so, you know, that's pretty sad. So Jeffrey's father spent a lot of time from home as he was studying to get a degree in chemistry at university. It said he was really smart, which you can definitely see from there. But he wasn't around a lot because he was trying to get a degree so he could get a good job and have the funding to take care of the family. You know, that's just how it goes. Like, if you want to get a good job, you're going to need to be able to have those degrees and the qualifications for it, which is completely why I would understand why Jeffrey's father would want to go to university. Maybe also it was a getaway for him. You know, like, his wife was constantly craving attention, or maybe from what the sources say about her being, well, quite toxic, greedy, wanting attention, maybe that just kind of got to the husband. And so, you know, spending more time away from home was an escape reality for him, which I completely understand. So yeah, I understand completely. Now, so it's a lot for a parent, especially if you're attending school as a parent. It's hard to come up with a rota in a way to try and get flexible time to be there for the kids. And, you know, to be there for your permission as a parent. So it's said that when Jeffrey's dad was home, his wife demanded constant attention from him. So he didn't get a lot of time to spend with the children. Now here, this is where I can say that the sources that I read up before, this is where it kind of agrees with it. So yeah, he recalled like a lot of his early years of family life as being extremely tense with her being around, because he would see his mother and father constantly arguing with each other. And then at one occasion, Joyce attempted suicide. She survived, but neither parent really devoted much time to their son. Now, Jeff was described as being happy anyway and energetic, an energetic child up to four. And at the age of four, he had to go in and have a surgery to correct a double hernia. It said after the surgery that, like, he changed. He wasn't the same anymore. He wasn't happy. He just seemed kind of down, quiet and timid is more the word. And that's how he was in elementary school. And so on his first grade report card, one teacher described Jeffrey
as being a very reserved child. The teacher did note that she felt like he was being neglected at home, but like nothing really came from it, nothing really improved from that note. So it was just noted in paperwork and things like that. And so from an early age, Jeffrey had an interest in dead animals. Yeah, dead animals. And it's not, it's kind of rare for children to be interested in dead animals because, well, if you think about it, children are scared of things, and you know, personally, if I saw a dead animal, being the way I am, and like my aims in the future, like probably working as a doctor or something, I would want to see what killed the animal, but at the same time, I probably would be scared of touching it because I'm a child. I haven't really experienced death. And so for Jeffrey, obviously, he didn't really care. Like, you know, he wasn't really grieving over the animal. Whereas if, as a child who is scared of dead animals, they will probably grieve because, you know, they feel upset that, you know, the animal has come to this circumstance. So his friends would say that he would collect large insects like butterflies, dragonflies, and he would put them in jars. But then it upgraded to roadkill. So from we went from literally butterflies, dragonflies to roadkill. He was at this point, he was probably really curious about, you know, death things. I think he wanted to kind of experience himself grief, but he wasn't really feeling the emotions he should have to be able to achieve the grief. So, you know, he's just a curious person, and roadkill was easy as an easy target for Jeffrey because they're already dead. He didn't have to kill them, so he's just like, I'm gonna take these dead animals, take them back to the house. And so there was a little, like a woodshed in the backyard, and that's where he would go to dismember the animals. His reason was that he wanted, like, the animals was because he was curious to see what was inside them. Like, what did it look like inside with, you know, just like cutting them open, what was in there. And so he wanted to know, and he would dissect these animals to bits and he would put them in mason jars just to like kind of see for himself and keep them as souvenirs in a way. Sometimes he would leave them in the wooded area, just like scattered around so that no one noticed, or he would just like leave them in the tool shed. So when he goes back there, he would obviously dismember the animals back there, so no one would obviously see him. And he would leave the stuff. He knew he couldn't leave in the tool shed, like all the stuff in there. But like that probably had to, like the smell. Like the smell must have, like the concentration, knowing a gas of diffusion just goes from a high concentration place to a low concentration place. So that smell would have like crowded that area if you think about it. So he probably stunk. The shed probably stunk, literally smelling like roadkill. So even when he would tell his friends, he would describe himself as curious, whereas his friends probably seen him as more disgusting. Or maybe a bit weird. I mean, I would definitely say he was weird for doing that. But yeah, so this, I'm just going to say right now, by the way, this will probably include a lot of things talking about death, and I know I should have put a disclaimer in, but there's a lot of death. There will be details. There will be things that are maybe unpleasant for someone to hear. So if you do feel uncomfortable, maybe this isn't the episode you should be listening to, but it is to do with serial killers, so I mean whatever you're comfortable with, okay? So so on like a road area, there was a dog that was like hit with a car, and it was left on the side of the street, so the driver must have just like put it there. So Jeffrey was coming along and he was like, oh my god, a dog, I'm gonna go get that. And so he goes and he gets the dog and he brings it back with him to the house, and he goes back into like the tool shed area of his backyard. He doesn't bring it into his actual like family house at this time, like his parents weren't home, so he could get away with these things easily without getting caught. And so he like takes the dog, he cuts the head off the dog, and then decides to nail the dog's body to a tree. He then took the dog's skull, he cleaned it up, so he got all the hair and the blood and everything, and yeah, everything off it. And so he took it out to the wooded area behind his home, and he puts the skull on a wooden cross, kind of like through the skull. I don't even know what his aim was there, but you know, he was just doing it. So basically in 1966, all the family ended up moving to Doylestown, Ohio. And during that time, Joyce, who was Jeffrey's mum, was pregnant with their second child, and she gave birth to a baby boy. Now, she allowed Jeffrey to pick out, like, out the actual name of his brother. And so he picked the name David. And this then, like, was 1968. They moved back to, well, they moved to Bath, Ohio. And 2 years later, over a family dinner, they were eating chicken. Jeff asked his father what would happen if the bones of the chicken were to be placed in bleach, like, solution. Now, as a parent, I really would be worried about this. I wouldn't expect my child to say that to me or ask what to do with bones, or how to, you know, or even how to just, do you get what I mean? Like, how to preserve them. But, you know, because, like, it was really awkward. He was kind of worried because he wasn't very social and he didn't seem to have many friends. But his father said that he was delighted at the initiative displayed by his son towards what he believed to be scientific curiosity. Obviously, because he was interested, the father, he was interested in chemistry. You know, bleach is kind of to do with chemistry. And so he willingly showed his son how to safely bleach and later preserve animal bones. And you know, at this time, I can fully understand, like, they haven't had much bonding time together, and for this, Jeffrey's dad was just like, this is like a way to bond, you know. And just as the years went on, he wasn't getting any attention, and now he was just getting this attention because like his father realised he may be interested in what his father was interested in. Now, Jeffrey Dahmer, incorporated these like preserving techniques into his bone collecting. Now, if he did it with the dog, it would have been a huge difference. Now, the same year, Joyce, Jeffrey's mother, began increasing her daily consumption of laxatives, sleeping pills, and like she just minimized contact with people, especially her husband and children, which is kind of like, you know, kind of sad. So during high school, many of his classmates said that he would bring beer or literally hard liquor to school. He would smother it into the lining of his jacket and then he would hide it in his locker. So Jeff would drink before, during, and then sometimes even after school. And this all started when he was only 14 years old. Now, when Jeff actually reached puberty, that's when he discovered that he was gay. Obviously, he didn't tell his parents about this because they didn't really have the best relationship, with Joyce distancing herself and like the father being at university constantly. I guess they don't have enough time to form a good relationship, so why would he tell his parents anyway? You know, I wouldn't if I were in that situation. Not to do with the roadkill and the
collecting bones, but if I found out that I, like, realised that I was gay, I wouldn't really tell my parents straight away. I would build a bond with them first. And so it was said that he did engage in a brief relationship with another boy. And then Jeff said that he began to sexually fantasize about dominating and controlling a submissive male partner. And, you know, teenage boys, I guess sometimes they can be, well, sometimes teenage boys can definitely be quite, I don't know, I don't know, very sexual feeling. Like, they will constantly feel, like, attracted towards sex and things like that. And I know I shouldn't really say it like that, but, you know, that's how it was. And that's where he was at the time in his life. So, by 1977, Jeffrey's grades were declining and he wasn't doing well. And he said it was because of the alcohol, but, like, yeah, it probably was because of the alcohol. Like, you know, you shouldn't really mess your life up with alcohol. But in his position, I guess it's just one of those things where, you know, it causes things, depression, constantly feeling like meh, like, you know, just tired constantly. And I understand that. So during this time, his parents' relationship was getting worse and worse. And so this, sorry about this, by the way. So they tried marriage counselling to save their marriage, but it wasn't looking good and it really didn't work. So they decided that it was probably best to get a divorce. And so Jeffrey's dad also thought it would be best if he moved out the home. And then in May of 1978, Jeffrey graduated from high school. And so, obviously, there was, like, a custody battle going on between Jeffrey's dad and Joyce. And clearly, there was just, like, some kind of, like, gap there between them. So, because of this, Joyce was awarded custody of her younger son, David. I think it... Well, David was her second child. Jeffrey was the first. So, I'm guessing that it was David. So she ended up vacating the family residence of, or like, their family home, and she moved in with family members of hers, of like hers. So she kind of left Jeff there by himself at the family home. So he was living there by himself for like a while, which clearly is not good. Even though he was 18 around the time, but if you're gonna leave an 18-year-old at home by himself, I mean, most 18-year-olds will probably throw parties. He's not going to really be productive. But yeah, he turned 18 around the time, so he was legally an adult. It's like he's living on his own in the family home and all that. So yeah, that's basically where he was at that point. He just was there and basically vacated. His mum vacated, and that's pretty much it from there. So that's the childhood, adolescence, and high school era, in a way. He just remained in the family home at that point. So I think we're going to move on to the next segment, which is basically late teens and his early 20s, and his first murder. Now, this is where it kind of gets a little bit sticky. So make sure you listen to the next segment. Like I said before, the quick disclaimer, there are parts that I will say in detail, you know, things like that. And I don't want people to be offended by what I say. So just be careful when I basically say things that might be gruesome for you. But yeah, so next segment is going to be about his late teens and early 20s. Okay, so moving on to his late teens and early 20s, this involves his first ever murder. Okay, so it was just 4 days, like, I think it was 4 days until his birthday. I can't remember. But yeah, it was basically 1973 and 3 weeks after his graduation. basically on June 18th, he picked up a hitchhiker, okay? Now, he sees this hitchhiker and he's a young man and he goes, he's kind of cute. So Jeff obviously pulls over and asks, hey, do you want to come over to my place? I have a few beers, you could just hang out, like, no big deal. Like, I've got the house to myself, no one's here. And so the hitchhiker was like, yeah, sure, I mean, nothing else better to do. So they go back to his house, they were drinking, they were listening to music. And, you know, Jeff, like, felt like he had a new friend because, you know, they don't really know him yet. And I think the hitchhiker got to this point where he was like, okay, I'm ready to go home now. He was ready to leave. He just wanted to leave. And so this kind of upset Jeffrey. And because instead of just letting him go home, instead he was like, I'm going to grab this £10 dumbbell and I'm just going to hit him in the head with it so he can't leave. I mean, solid plan. Solid plan, Jeffrey. Go on. So this victim was already sitting in a chair, and after he hit him, he then strangled the hitchhiker until he died. Now, this hitchhiker, by the way, his name was Stephen Mark Hicks, who was almost 19. So, yeah, he kind of was like a young lad. So, yeah, he died. He was basically strangled until he died. Now, once Jeffrey knew that he was dead, he began to remove Stephen's clothing, and this is where it gets a little bit, graphic. So he then said that he stood over the victim's body and masturbated over Stephen. Now, according to Jeff, this was like his first time killing an actual person, and he was feeling different emotions. Like excited, aroused, and you know, I'm guessing there was no actual guilt in what he had just done. So, you know, the next day, Jeff had this dead body in his house, and he's like, he's got to do something with the body. And so he takes the body down to his basement, and that's where he takes apart the whole body. Like, he just, like, removes parts, and you know, Jeff, like, grabs a shovel and digs a grave in his backyard because he needs to put the remains somewhere. And so he puts the remains in his own backyard. Now, several weeks went by and Jeff decided to actually dig up the body and cut it up some more. Now, if I were to put myself in the mind of a serial killer, right, who has just done their first ever murder, okay, what I would do is, because he just dug a grave for the remains, it brings up the mud, doesn't it? Now, if you were going to do it in a field, clearly, if you were to bury someone in the field, anyone in split seconds would know where you put that body because, you know, it brings up mud. Like, it's basically like that. It's easy to know. So, I mean, I guess what was going through Jeffrey's mind was that, you know, he was bored. Maybe he wanted to have some fun. Maybe he, like, I don't know, maybe he wanted to get bones, probably wanted to keep a souvenir. Maybe he forgot to get a souvenir, that's the thing. So, yeah, he just basically cuts it up some more. And it is uncomfortable for me to be saying this because it's, like, not something that anyone would want to hear or do or see unless you're a serial killer. Then if you feel like you are a serial killer, maybe get some help before you kill someone, okay? If you are one of my, like, audience listeners, get help, okay? I'm just saying. So, remember when, like, his dad showed him how to preserve bones and how to get the flesh off the bones, especially, like, with the chicken? Well, he used that technique, right? And he got some acid and he soaks the body in acid to try and get all the flesh and all, like, basically the meaty stuff, the nerves and everything off the bones. And he, like, just wants to keep them or something. So he takes the acid solution and he flushes it down the toilet. And then Jeff, crushes up the bones and he then scatters them into the wooded area behind the family home. And yeah, I mean, the thing is, I did use Stephen's name, and I know people do get sued for this, but in a way, this is just a retelling, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm not. I know they didn't give me permission to do it, but like, it's all over the internet anyway, and I just want to be there. As I'm saying, you know, Wikipedia has it, other sites have it, magazines still have it from the past, not magazines, but like newsletters and newspapers. So I'm just, I think from now on, I'm probably not going to speak about it. I'm not sure. I'm just probably gonna, yeah, I don't want to get into it because I'm not trying to be disrespectful by any means. I'm just basically saying, yeah, here's a person that Jeffrey killed. Maybe, you know, they got justice, and maybe the name should be brought up for the fact that they did get justice for it. I'm just saying. So, this was Jeffrey's first kill. He was excited. It really got him going. I think he enjoyed it way too much. And he was like, killing. I like this. I want to try it again. So 6 weeks goes by and Jeff's father had found a new love. And no, he's got a new girl and actually a new fiance. So they ended up going by the old house to see how Jeffrey was doing and checking on him. And that's when he actually discovered that Jeff was living alone. And the whole time he thought that like he was living with his mom. He wasn't. And so he had no idea. He thought it was best that if Jeffrey went to college and did something productive with himself and his life, it would be better. And, you know, his father offered to pay for his, like, college tutoring or schooling. And so he ended up attending Ohio State University. Whilst attending the university, he received a GPA score of 0.45. Like, how did he achieve that? You know, wow. Jeffrey's father had paid for his schooling anyway in advance, so Jeffrey thought it would be best if he dropped out of university, and he only attended for 3 months anyway, so yeah, a waste of money. So Jeffrey's father again is trying to help his son, trying to find the right purpose in his life. So he's telling Jeffrey, you know, you should like definitely enlist in the US Army. Jeffrey agrees and he enlists into the army. I mean, I don't know what to say about this, but you know, maybe it would have set him straight if it was proper. So he actually trained as a medical specialist in San Antonio, Texas, and then in July 1979, he was stationed in West Germany where he served as a combat medic. So, like, how did he actually get that job? You know what I mean? So yeah, he was just like a combat medic for that time. And apparently, according to some reports, in Dahmer's first year of service, he was an average or slightly above average soldier, which is weird because, you know, like, yeah. Just like, how can I put it? Just like his mind and how it works. It's quite weird. Now, because of like Dahmer's alcohol abuse, his performance deteriorated, and in March 1981, he was deemed unsuitable for military service and was later discharged from the army. He received an honourable discharge, though, as his superiors did not believe that any problems Dahmer had in the army would be applicable in or to civilian life. So, yeah, that was just like where he was in that. Now, obviously, later after that, like, two soldiers attested to the fact that they had been raped by Jeffrey whilst being in the army, and one stated that in 2010, so years and years later, that Jeff had repeatedly raped him over a 17-month period whilst they were both stationed in Germany, whilst another soldier believed that Jeff had drugged and raped him. So Jeffrey obviously took advantage of the fact that he could get those medical supplies that he needed and rape them. So yeah, they were raped in 1979. In March, well, that's what I've just said, in March when he was thingy. So He was sent to South Carolina for debriefing, and he was also provided with a plane ticket to travel anywhere in the country. So, if you could go anywhere in the country, where would you go? I mean, damn, that's like a lot of options. So he was like, he can't go home because he'd have to tell his dad that he failed at everything. He failed with the university, he failed to even keep care of himself at home, and he failed being, in the army. So he's like, he's gonna go to Florida, Miami Beach. Doesn't tell his dad. He moves to Florida and he actually found work at a local restaurant and rented a room in a motel nearby. Now, even though he would spend most of his income on alcohol, he did get actually evicted from the motel and he was living and not paying. So once he actually got kicked out, he was left with nowhere to go. Like, he was really feeling defeated at this point. And so he ends up calling his dad and asks if he could come back to his in ho to Ohio, sorry. He moves in with his father and his new stepmother. So of course, like any parent does, they give you chores and they're like, we have to make sure that Jeffrey is staying busy or whatever. He can't be like a freeloader in the home. So they gave him lots of things to do around the home, and they constantly pushed him to obviously get a job. Like, he needed a job for definite. And yeah, so he did actually continue to get drunk, and he drank heavily. So 2 weeks after his return, he got arrested for drunken disorderly conduct, for which he was fined $60 and given a 10-day suspension jail sentence. So yeah, that's just how it was. So his father couldn't help him when it came to his drinking, so he had enough. He's like, I'm done with you. You're drinking too much. His bedroom floor was quite literally filled with bottles, well, empty bottles of alcohol. And he tells Jeffrey, you know what? You're gonna go live with your grandmother in West Allis, Wisconsin. So yeah, that's just how it is. You're going to live with your grandma. That's it. We can't take you anymore. End of. So I certainly don't blame them there. But what's the grandmother gonna do? Like, the father's shown affection and love by re-entering his life and dropping by the home, just to see how Jeffrey was. And it's kind of nice of him to do that. Like, that's the affection and love that Jeffrey needed. But I think his grandmother gave it more than any other family member, and he did love his grandma. So when he went to go live with her, it did help him change things up a bit, and he became happier, and he would attend church with his grandma. He would help around the house and things like she couldn't really do. She was restricted, of course, because as she was getting older, it was just difficult for her to do things. And so he even found a job at the Milwaukee Blood Plasma Center, which is quite fitting considering his murderous vibes, things like that. So yeah, he was doing better, and he was able to keep the job for 10 months. Like, for him, that is a big achievement. But in fact, he did get laid off, which he then remained unemployed for 2 years. And by his late, like 1985, he had begun to visit local gay bathhouses. And when going to these bathhouses, he would have sex with different men working there. And he would later say that he became really frustrated at his partners when they were having sex with them, because they'd be constantly like moving around and talking too much, and he just didn't like it. Like, he wanted them to shut up, and instead of just like maybe telling them, hey, can you stop like talking, he laced their drinks with crushed sleeping pills that he was sneaking there, and this would just like completely knock the victim out, and they would like pass out. And whilst they would pass out, Jeffrey would rape them whilst they were asleep. So I would like to like be on this conversation, by the way. If someone gave you permission beforehand to have sex with them, like they gave full consent, then yes, you can do that whilst they're awake, okay? Now, if that person suddenly, I don't know, passes out, alcohol, yeah. This then changes the circumstance you should be in, and it doesn't enlist you or entitle you to further have sex with them, because that then is rape. And so here, Jeffrey did that 12 times. When the owners found out that he was drugging the workers, they revoked his membership and banned him from the, like, the actual bathhouse. They didn't even call the police, but because it was a gay bathhouse, it's understandable because, you know, it's gay. Like, in that time, being gay was, like, a crime for, like, not a crime, but it was looked down on as being, like, kind of within the devil's category, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, they still should have called the police or something. Instead of being upset about this, though, Jeffrey took this opportunity to just do it on his own. Like, he didn't need the bathhouse. He could just, like, rent a hotel room and do it on his own terms, and so he did. So, yeah, after basically saying he was going to do it on his own terms, on November 20th, 1987, he actually met a 25-year-old man at the bar, and he asked if he wanted to return with him to his hotel and stay with him. And, you know, hang out and have some drinks. We all know, like, the intentions was not to just have drinks, okay? Now, he did intend to just drug and rape him as he lay unconscious, but not to murder him. And he was just like, I was just going to drug him and then rape him. Like, come on. Like, nothing bad here is happening. But the morning after, Jeffrey wakes up and he's like, he sees the victim, or the man that he brought home the night before, and he was laying beneath him on the bed. His chest was absolutely caved in. And, you know, like, it was just black and blue with bruises, and blood was coming out the corner of his mouth. Sorry. And Jeffrey's fist and one forearm was covered in bruises, probably due to the impact that he, you know, caused. And then Jeffrey would say that he had absolutely no memory of killing this person, but later told the investigators that, and I quote, he just, like, quoted, could not believe that this had happened, end quote. Like, come on. Like, his way of just saying, they were just hanging out, he was just going to drug and rape him. Like, he didn't think he was going to kill him. And, like, I woke up and he was dead. Like, no. So, just own up to it. Like, no, just tell the truth. We know you're lying. You definitely remember, like, come on. So, Jeffrey wakes up and sees his victim, and he's like, oh shit, I definitely have to get rid of the body. And he decides to purchase a large suitcase and stuffs the body into the suitcase, and he ends up taking the body of, like, the suitcase to his grandmother's house. And so he just leaves the suitcase unopened for about a week. Guys, a week. A week. Like, why? Like, the smell, what the hell? Like, that smell must have really gotten people's nerves. And so once the week went by, he decides to open it up and dismember the body. So, yeah, his aim is basically to dismember the damn body, okay? Now, yeah, he dismembers the body. He severs the head, the arms, the legs, the torso. So, when, well, the legs from the torso. And so, obviously, his aim is to get the bones separated from the flesh. And he cuts the flesh into a bunch of different pieces. He places the pieces of flesh into garbage bags and then wraps up the bones in paper, where he then used a sledgehammer to, like, crush the bones. So he wraps it in paper, you know, and just, like, and he doesn't, like, it doesn't go everywhere, the bone, the ash bones, whatever. And so he's doing this in grandma's basement, by the way, like, no. Like, she had no idea he was doing this. And the fact that she didn't know was just, wow, so sad. So, yeah, he's doing it in his grandma's basement, yeah. He disposed of like all of the remains except for the head. So he put the remains in the trash, and 2 weeks later, he was getting like he was letting everything like preserve, if you know what I mean. So he takes the head of the victim that he wants to he wants to preserve the skull. He really wants the skull. He's like, I'm having this. So he's like, I'm gonna do what my dad taught me, to clean off the meat and stuff the bones, stuff from the bones so he could preserve the bones. He takes the head, boils some water, and he puts in like a mixture of Soil X and bleach. The Soil X is like a cleaning solution, by the way, and it's pretty powerful. And he's doing this in effort to retain the skull. So the bleach actually made the skull way too brittle, and it just like fell apart. So he was really annoyed, and all that work and effort, it just lost, and he threw it away in the end. So he was determined to get another one, though. Another victim, yeah. So it turns out he's found his passion in life. Like, he's very passionate about killing people. And this was a time where he began to like seek victims out. And most of them he would actually meet in like gay bars, and he would like constantly ask them to come back to his place, which is like, no, you're going to die. I'm sorry, but you go to his place, you're going to die. So yeah, you know the drill. He would drug them, and once they were passed out, he would have sexual relations with that person. I mean, he would rape them, that is basically what it is. And then he will kill them by strangulation. So, 2 months later, and this one I'm putting out a big disclaimer, by the way. 2 months later, Jeffrey comes across or meets a 14-year-old Native American sex worker. First of all, no, that sentence I shouldn't even have to say. A 14-year-old sex worker, okay? Now, why is a 14-year-old working as a sex worker? Now, there is like some sources that say he was sex trafficked, so that's like really awful for that person. And the fact that he ran into Jeffrey Dahmer, it just that's it, end of life, really. So, yeah, like sympathy for this poor child. Now this 14-year-old sex worker, you know, Jeffrey went up to him and was like, hey, would you like pose for some nude pictures? I'll give you $50 for it. Just come over to my place, you don't have to have sex with me. I just want some nude photos, and I need a model, and you would be perfect. And this boy was like, geez, like $50? Hell yeah, I'm there. So, you know, he agrees, and they go back to his grandma's place. And once they get there, they actually engage in sexual intercourse. And as usual, Jeffrey ends up drugging him. He crushed like a bunch of sleeping pills, put it in his drink, offered to him, and just waited until once he passed out. He then strangled him and killed him. Now, literally, Jeffrey left this young victim in his grandmother's basement, in his grandmother's house for a week. And then when he actually got a chance, he dismembered the body. Now, he discarded his body in the trash, except again his skull. And Jeffrey really wanted like a skull, like it's a souvenir slash trophy. Like, Jeffrey does the same thing. So yeah, like clearly he wanted a trophy. And Jeffrey does the same thing again. But this time the bones were brittle and it did not work, so he just had to throw it away again. And you know, he really wanted to keep the skull. So Jeffrey was kind of like experimenting to find the right formula to do this. And now it was a matter of time before he was able to find, you know, a way to do it all again. Now, on March 24th of 1994, this is a side note, just by the way,
March is like a time when everything kind of happens. Like, obviously something's gone, but yeah, March always comes up to the backstory of something, and yeah, it's happening now again. Like, I see it a lot. Like, it happens on different cases, like mainly in March. Like, what's up with March? Anyway, back to the story. March 24th, 1988. Jeffrey now meets a 22-year-old man outside of a gay bar, and he's like, hey, I'll give you $50 if you just come out, hang out with me and spend the remainder of the night with me. And this 22-year-old was like, hey, okay then. So they go back to Jeffrey's grandmother's house, and same thing, he drugs them with a bunch of sleeping pills. Once the guy is passed out, he strangles him with a leather strap. This time though, Jeffrey decided that he wanted to perform oral sex on this victim. And once he was done, like, that's necrophilia. Like, no. So, this victim, though, was dismembered within 24 hours of this murder. Jeffrey was quick about it. Like, he really wanted this trophy to be within his reach. And so, keeps the skull again. And this time, it said that, like, Jeffrey didn't really want this guy's skull. Instead, he was trying to boil it and keep it, and ended up crushing it up and throwing it away. Jeffrey later said that he didn't find his victim very attractive, and that's why he didn't really want to keep the skull. So, like, Jeffrey, why would you kill him then? Like, get some sense into your head, damn. Practice, like, you practice just for the sake of it right now. So, April 23rd, Jeffrey lured another young man into the house. But, like, this time, he gave this victim drugged coffee. And both he and the victim heard Jeffrey's grandmother calling him, calling down towards him because they're in the basement, obviously. And his grandma is, like, yelling, like, Jeffrey, is that you? And this obviously freaked him out. So he tried to play it off like he was there by himself. Like, he didn't have a guess. But, like, come on. His grandma knew that, like, someone was definitely with him because she heard it. Like, she definitely heard it. So she knew that someone was with him, and he's like, okay, I can't kill this guy anymore because my grandma knows that I've got someone down here. So Jeffrey had already drugged this victim, and the victim was unconscious. So he ended up carrying him out to the car and then drives the victim to General Hospital and just drops him off and leaves him there. Like, this victim was so lucky, like, to even survive. Like, thank God, grandma. Now, in September of 1988, Jeffrey's grandma asked him to move out because because his habit of bringing young men to her home late at night, you know, this foul smell's coming from the basement, and, like, you know, she didn't like it, it's bothering her, and she was so close to stopping this if she just went down to the basement. And, like, if she went down to the basement, she probably would have seen what he was doing. And, you know, would he kill his, grandmother? Like, would he have the guts to kill his own grandmother? Like, no one knows. I mean, maybe he could have. You know, like, we don't know. He could have. Honestly, I'm not sure right now. But, yeah, he maybe could have. And now, it was like, yeah, his grandma could have stopped it, but we don't blame her by any means because, you know, she still asked him to move out and do it elsewhere. Now, he ends up finding a one-bedroom apartment. And, like, yeah, he ends up moving out, and the literal next day, Jeff was arrested. And he actually got caught because he lured, like, this 13-year-old boy into his apartment. And, yeah, he drugged the young boy and then, like, he sexually fondled him, like, started to, fondled, like, do you get it? I don't know. But, yeah, he got caught and he was arrested. And then January 1989, he was convicted of second-degree sexual assault and of enticing a child for immoral purposes. And sentences, well, for the assault, was suspended until the May of 1989, and so a few months later, you know, he didn't really last too long on his own. So literally hours after moving out on his own, he ended up getting caught and was arrested.
And then he would end up moving back in with his grandmother. I mean, this time, you think that she would set up some rules. Maybe she did. But still, would he have listened? No. Because that then led him to bring back his fifth victim. So, a 24-year-old aspiring model who he met at a gay bar on March 25th, 1989. Once again, according to Jeffrey, he was not looking to commit a crime. He wasn't looking to commit with a crime with any of them, was he? You know, just to drug and rape them. Jeez, Jeffrey. So it was shortly before closing time this victim had come up and started talking to him. So Jeffrey just, asked him if he wanted to go back to his grandma's house. And yeah, they engaged in oral sex and then Jeffrey drugged and strangled him. It just happened. He, air quotes, didn't mean to, end of air quotes. So yeah, the following morning, he ended up placing the corpse in his grandmother's bathtub. Yes, grandmother's bathtub, where he proceeded to cut up the body and then he decapitated the body. But for attempting to take the meat off the bones, he stripped the flesh from the body, crushed up the bones, disposed of it against the trash, and he kept the skull. So according to Jeffrey, he found this victim, quote, exceptionally attractive, end quote, and was the first victim he permanently kept any body parts of. So he preserved the victim's head and lower region, aka the penis. Yes, he did. He put it in acetone and stored them in his work locker. Yes, I just said that, work locker. The following year, he ended up moving and he took these items with him because, he really liked this guy and he was something special to Jeffrey at the time. And yeah, he got a job prior to help. To his arrest at a chocolate factory. So, wow. Not that if you work at a chocolate factory you're a creep, yeah, but why would you have this creep, okay, Jeffrey, work at a chocolate factory? No. Who are you, Willy Wonka or something? No. So yeah, he was working, he was making his own money, and that's how he was able to afford the apartment on his own in the first place. And yeah, so when I talked before about the 13-year-old boy, his sentencing was postponed until May, and well, on May, that's when his sentencing takes place. So in you think that he'd go away for a long time, right? No, he didn't. He got, are you ready, 5 years of probation. And he had a work release permit, so that way he could keep his job, but he also had to register as a sex offender, which, understandable. But what does that do? Does that stop him from doing it again? No, it doesn't. Wow. So yeah, it's already happened. I can't really change that. So in May 1990, that's when Jeff moved to his own apartment again. And this time it was located on North 25th Street in Milwaukee. And it's pretty famous because all of Jeffrey Dahmer's cult followers know this location well, pretty well. Now this apartment was located in a very high crime area, so the apartment was close to his workplace at the chocolate factory. And yeah, so it was $300 per month for his apartment, which was pretty much a steal. He didn't care if there was a high crime or anything. He just knew he'd be fine, and that's per month. That's not even bad. Some people have to pay $90 a week for rent. And so within a week of moving to his new apartment, he was getting ready for his sixth victim, who was a 32 male sex worker, okay? Now he had lured him into his apartment with the promise of $50 for sex. He gave the victim a drink laced with seven sleeping pills and then strangled him. That following day, right, Jeffrey decided to purchase a Polaroid camera, which took several pictures of the victim's body in suggestive positions before dismembering him in the bathroom. He boiled the legs, the arms, the pelvis in a steel kettle, and then rinsed the bones in his skin. And then he'd dissolve the remainder of the victim's skeleton in a container filled with acid. Now later, Jeffrey sprayed the skull, and which he placed alongside the skull of the previous victim inside a metal filing cabinet. Yeah, it literally keeps going, honestly. So yeah, I don't even know how to explain, because this is like a really long segment that I'm doing right now, and I've literally gone into like his late 30s as well, and like his 1990 killings. So maybe I'm just going to keep this in as well, the 1990 killings, and then I'll do the next one as 1991 killings, and then I'll probably do it as his arrest in that one as well. So yeah, this is the 1990 killings that, you know, he enticed in. So yeah, Jeffrey lured another 27-year-old acquaintance to his apartment. Same stuff, different day. He was drug strangled. He placed the victim's skeleton in his freezer for several months in hope that it would not retain moisture. Freezing the skeleton, it didn't remove any moisture, and the skeleton did, of the victim would be put in acid. But several months later, like, Jeffrey accidentally destroyed the skull when he placed it into the oven to dry. So it like caused the skull to explode unexpectedly. And yeah. So, it goes on, really. So he met a 22-year-old after that, Chicago native, and he agreed to come back to Jeffrey's apartment. And Jeffrey was like, hey, if you just come back to my apartment and hang out, I'll give you $50. This victim agreed. So yeah, I'm guessing a lot of people struggle to get money and, you know, anything to just get a bit of money. So when they went to this place, Jeffrey had attempted to perform oral sex on this victim, but Jeff was then informed, and quote, that will cost you extra, end quote. So this like really, really made Jeffrey mad. So at this time he only had 2 sleeping pills left, and he knew that this wasn't enough to knock him out. So instead of knocking him out, Jeffrey just cut his throat. He went right in with it, honestly, and this man bled to death. So, remember when he got the Polaroid camera? Yeah, well, he posed the victim's body and was like, yay, I'm a photographer now, and started taking photographs in suggestive ways, or that he did put the body in suggestive ways. So yeah, before placing the body in his bathtub for dismemberment, Jeffrey said that while the body was in the bathtub, he repeatedly kissed and talked to the severed head. Like, that, no. Just, no. So yeah, he's doing that whilst he dismembered the remainder of the body. So it was like his friend. He wrapped the heart, the biceps, and portions of his victim's flesh from his legs in plastic bags, and then placed them in the fridge for later consumption. Yes, I just said that right, consumption. Jeff boiled the remaining flesh and organs into, quote, jelly-like substance, end quote, using again Soil X, which was the chemical cleaner, and that was able to get the flesh off the bones easily. And then he painted and coated the skull with enamel. So he's now creating in this little metal cabinet, his own little museum. And on September 24th, Jeff like lured another victim to his place, but this time Jeff wasn't attracted to the victim. So instead of keeping any of the body parts, you know what I mean, the skull, he just like photographed the dismemberment process and then discarded of the remains completely, you know what I mean, like, wow. So yeah, that was pretty much that part. So yeah, they were like, just, yeah. April, wait a minute, I'm gonna leave this one for the next, well, this next murder part, because I'm coming from my notes. I'm gonna leave this next little murder for the 1991 killings, so the next segment. So yeah, I hope you enjoy like me talking for the past 40 minutes. This is going to be a really long episode, guys, so make sure you stay tuned. And yeah, disclaimers continue into the next one as well. Okay, so I've literally just lost 30 minutes of, like, me talking audio-wise. about Jeffrey and like more of his 1991 killings. So I'm just going to carry on going back all over that because, you know, I'm just going to have to at this point because I do need to finish the episode off and it'd be a shame if I didn't. So, where were we? Okay, so we were on April 7th, I'm pretty sure. We were talking about, like, you know, Jeffrey's, yeah, like, whew, I can't even remember if I'm honest. I do remember, I'm joking. So, the thing is, okay, yeah, so we're gonna go from here, right? April 7th, right? So Jeffrey basically encountered like a 19-year-old boy who was walking to get his key cut, okay? Now, Jeffrey saw this person and was like, hey, you wanna come over to my apartment and just like hang out? Like, do anything, got some beers, she was just hang out. Now, they did go back to the apartment, he drugged him again, but this time it literally got worse. So Jeffrey literally drills a hole into the victim's skull and pours hydrochloric acid into it, okay? Now, this victim isn't even dead. He is knocked out, okay? Now, he wakes up, okay? And Jeffrey has got this excited sex drive on him that he's just loving because this 19-year-old is currently in such a non-resistant, submissive state and he's enjoying this. So somebody who's still alive and doesn't understand, it's just literally bewildering, honestly. Now, here is what the 19-year-old said, okay? This is what the victim said. Quote, I have a headache. What time is it? End quote. So he didn't even know, okay? He didn't even know he had a hole in his head, which honestly, I wouldn't even want to know either, okay? So he goes back to bed after Jeffrey was like, okay, we need to drug him again. So he wanted the victim to still be alive at this point, and yeah, he was. So, you know, using cold water this time to keep the skull, he's using a little bit of salt in the water, and for several weeks, he basically lets it soak in hopes to permanently keep it. It didn't work, okay? So there were fellow residents in the apartment who felt like there was constantly bad foul smells coming from the apartment, and they would also hear a chainsaw. Like, why would you hear a chainsaw in an apartment? Like, you understand where I'm coming from? So yeah, there was like a chainsaw that they could hear, and they were just getting sus about it. So they did contact the manager. And the manager would basically, like, call Jeffrey up, not even go round to the apartment. He would just call Jeffrey up and go, right, there's people complaining, what the hell are you doing? Jeffrey's first excuse was that his fridge broke and left a lot of the things in there spoil, and that was the foul smell. So obviously the manager was like, yeah, yeah, okay then, but please take care of it. And at this point, Jeffrey was like, yeah, yeah, but obviously sometime later, you know, the manager contacted him again and was like, what's going on? Like, why haven't you cleared it up yet? I thought you cleared this up. And Jeffrey was like, oh my God, you don't understand. Several of my tropical fish died and it's causing this horrendous smell, and that's what it is. So the manager's like, okay, right, just get it fixed up. What about the chainsaw? And Jeffrey's like, what about the chainsaw? So the manager, if the manager had honestly gone round, maybe he could have, like, stopped half of this. But I'm not too sure myself because, you know, for his safety, it's probably best if he didn't anyway. So, yeah, that's what happened with the manager. Now, on the afternoon of May 26, 1991, Jeffrey found another 14-year-old boy and offered him money to hang out with him. Now, yeah, he was really reluctant. So Jeff drugged him when he did go to the thingy. The apartment, and the poor boy passed out, and this is where he gets creative again. So he takes the drill, drills a single hole into the victim's skull. Again, he injected hydrochloric acid into the frontal lobe, which is basically like your forehead going up to your hairline. That's like where it is. And the victim's still alive, as per usual. So Jeffrey led this boy into his bedroom, and in the bedroom, the body of a victim was in there. He killed 3 days prior and was laying naked on the floor. This boy sees this and passes out. Now, basically, he's literally unconscious, and Jeffrey, he's just drinking, and then for some reason after that, he walks out and he literally goes to a bar and has a drink, okay? Then after that, he purchases more alcohol at a liquor store and then goes back to the apartment. But he notices that there's a little boy just outside and there's women surrounding him, right? And you know, he does actually end up noticing that that boy is actually the boy he had drilled in the head, okay? Now, the whole excuse he made up with this is that the boy, by the way, the 14-year-old boy, was his 19-year-old lover. And the way he proved that they were together to the police, who the women had called and had a really bad feeling about this, basically showed pictures saying, yeah, like, we got pretty drunk and he posed for sex photos, like, here they are. This shows how truly close I am to him. He is my boyfriend, blah, blah. So that kind of led the police away to his apartment, and the women were really annoyed that the police were like, no, shut up, go away, you are not interfering with this. So yeah, they're gone, and yeah, it's not your problem, don't worry about it, run along. That's what the women were told, even when the women felt like there was something wrong with it. So yeah, Jeffrey decided to, well, had been called out of work because he really wanted to devote his day to dismembering two bodies, and you know, he just was like, I'm sick, I can't come in. But the true reason was because he would torture 3 more men and dismember, kill, whatever, in the same way he did with his previous victim. So yeah, he would call out from work to just dedicate his time to do this. And eventually it did lead to Jeffrey getting fired because of that. He said it was another trigger to kill and dismember another victim, which was July 22nd, 1991. Jeffrey approached 3 men with an offer of $100 to accompany him to his apartment to pose for some nude photographs, drink beer and keep him company. One of the trio was a 32-year-old man. And some people have, like, you know, problems with money, and this man took it as an opportunity to get easy money. So yeah, he did it. And he walked around and he was noticing random stuff around the house. Like, there was boxes, there was like several boxes of hydrochloric acid on the floor, you know, the foul smell, everything like that, right? And you know, there was a smell coming from this 57-gallon drum in the corner of the bedroom, okay? This was Jeffrey's bedroom. And he knew there was something in there, okay? So Jeffrey then placed his head on the victim's chest, kind of like in a romantic way. But instead of, he was holding out a knife, so that wasn't really romantic. And Jeff basically told him that he'd rip his heart out. So the victim was like, what the actual hell is going on? Like, he needed to think fast, and he tried to think of ways to escape. One of the ways is the bathroom. So he asked repeatedly to go to the bathroom, and once he did, he realised there was not a single window in there that he could climb out of. So yeah, he would say, can I use the bathroom one more time, please? And yeah, he would say yes. So at this point, he comes back out and Jeffrey wasn't really focusing on him. So the guy punches him in the face as much as he can and runs out the front door. At 11:30 p.m, the victim flagged down the 2 Milwaukee police officers. He's like, this dude just like attacked me. There's weird shit going on there. You need to check it out. Also, I've got handcuffs on. Please, can you get them off me? He put them on me, but the keys didn't fit, unfortunately. So once they arrived at Jeffrey's, they noticed everything. Like, the first thing was they wanted to get the key to, you know, the handcuffs. And so Jeffrey was really annoyed and was like, no, you're not going in there. He told them where the key was. But when the police officers were like, no, move, They were able to get him detained in handcuffs themselves, and then they went to the dresser to get the key for the victim's handcuffs, and turns out in the same dresser was in fact, are you ready for this, guys? Was in fact 74 Polaroid pictures, okay? Now, I'm not sure if it's 74, but later on it was revealed there was 74 in total. So yeah, 74 Polaroid pictures of these victims, okay? That's all I can really say about that. And they followed most of these smells everywhere. Turns out, in the refrigerator, they see a freshly severed head of a male on the bottom shelf, literally along with, like, other parts of bodies. Just around the home in general, there were things scattered around, things in plastic bags. Now, in the 57 drum gallon, there were three dismembered torsos in there in acid solution, okay? Like, wow. There was just so many victims that were dismembered but found in there. Now, obviously, he was arrested, and July 23rd, 1991, he was brought in for questioning. He had already been arrested, and he was sitting in prison. So, yeah, he admitted to investigators that he'd murdered 16 young men in Wisconsin since 1987, and on January 30th, 1992, his real trial, sorry, began, and it lasted 2 weeks until he was sentenced life imprisonment plus 40 years. So think about it, life imprisonment is like, what, 60 to 70 years? So on top of that, another 70 years, there is no surviving prison. Like, you can survive prison, but the time is also against you, even though there's plenty of it, okay? Now, death penalty wasn't really an option because the state of Wisconsin had abolished capital punishment in 1853, sorry. So personally, no, I think the death penalty shouldn't have happened. You know, it's a quick death for people who have caused so much trauma. Like, no, make them miserable in prison, in solitary confinement, whatever, just do it. And so yeah, Jeffrey spent the first year after being incarcerated in solitary confinement. So due to his concerns in physical safety, they actually moved him to a less secure unit after 1 year, because his like inmates were threatening him, they wanted him dead. So on the morning November 28th of 1994, Jeffrey was actually found on the floor of bathrooms at the gym, suffering from extreme head and facial wounds. He had literally been beat in the face and head with a 20-inch metal bar, and it seemed that he's been slammed against the wall during the assault. And what's quite funny is he was actually still alive whilst he was rushed to a nearby hospital, but then again, an hour later, he was actually pronounced dead. Which, yeah, that, to be honest, is kind of annoying. You know, he should have suffered, but when they asked the people responsible, like, why did you attack Jeffrey? Said, because God told them to. Like, that was their motive to killing Jeffrey. You know what I mean? Like, the guy who helped clean up as well, he was killed because God told them to do it. Like, that's a quote. And so, yeah, Jeffrey died after that. And to me, it wasn't a very good death either. I wish he would have suffered more, because it was said during the attack in the gym that he didn't even flinch at what they did to him. So the way I see it, he didn't suffer enough. So yeah, I feel like I'm gonna do a part two on this, or maybe upload this bit, and I'll add another episode or a segment later to basically talk about the psychological point of view and the disorders that Jeffrey Dahmer did actually have. But this is the basically final segment that I had to re-record all over again. So I'm sorry if it was really rushed, but I will probably go into more detail about this. There are other ways to look into detail. For example, his father actually ended up writing a book about this experience in his life with Jeffrey. And you know, yeah, that's pretty much it. There's also things on Netflix about like this kind of thing. So yeah, there's so many TV shows that are based on it, and this is pretty much it. for what I'm going to say for today. I want to say thank you for listening. You've come so far in this. I've come so far. I've literally spent 4 hours on this after each one processing. So thank you for listening. And this is the Jeffrey Dahmer episode of The Morgue.